Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, November 19th, 2021. Here's the headline in the Chicago Tribune, home delivered every day. Yeah, I don't just get the Sun-Times. I don't just get the New York Times. I get the Tribunal as well, Chicago Tribune. Jury ends third day without a verdict. This is a very appropriate one we're going to be talking about with my guest. Jury ends third day without a verdict. Here's the lead. They sent three reporters out there. As jury deliberations dragged into a third full day, Kyle Rittenhouse's attorney, Mark Richards, came into the courtroom for a change of scenery. He has spent much of his time since closing argument on a different floor of the stately Kenosha County Courthouse waiting for a sign of where jurors were in their discussion. Considered one of the best criminal defense attorneys in Wisconsin, he had never had a jury take longer than 18 hours to make a decision. That's called reporters really scrambling to say something, anything, as they sit around a courthouse for 3 days waiting for a verdict to come and losing their minds. They go, I know, I'll squeeze something out of this lawyer. I'll call him one of the best defense lawyers in the state of Wisconsin. Maybe he'll talk to us. Anyway, I'm very cynical and jaded because I've been in this business way too long. I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest who's not cynical, not jaded, and has not been in the business way too long and has a fresh, optimistic view of the world every single time I talk to her. Even she's laughing at that one. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
My name is Ramana Hussein. I'm an assistant editor on the news desk at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes. And she's also, as you know, a columnist and wrote a few editorials for the Sun-Times. And you're also, I just want to alert our listeners, keeping your eye out for breaking news regarding the Kyle Rittenhouse case, whether the jury is now in its fourth day of deliberations, I think. Isn't that right, Ramana? 4 days? Fourth day?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And just to let you know, I am checking the AP wires, and there looks like there is a verdict. So we'll probably hear within the hour what the verdict is.
Whoa. You want to make a prediction?
I'm going to say he might get acquitted. I don't know about the lesser charges, but on the serious charges, yes.
He'll get acquitted. All right. Well, let's talk about that. And I know you have some strong feelings about this, as do I. So Kyle Rittenhouse case, pudgy white kid from Illinois, goes to Kenosha with a rifle in the middle of a riot. Ends up killing two people and injuring a third, shooting them. And the general consensus from many of the people, the white people I know in the city of Chicago, is, Ben, you're too hard on Kyle Rittenhouse. You have to understand a jury should only look at the facts in front of it. Ben, don't bring your prejudices and your worldview in the discussion of this. Ben, isolate absolutely everything that ever existed in the entire world away from this case and just look at the facts. And if you look at the facts, Ben, you must come to the conclusion that Kyle Rittenhouse is innocent. I'm just telling you what so many white people I know have to say about this case. Your thoughts, Romana?
I just think there's just a lot of to unpack here. First of all, I want to start off saying that I do think Kyle Rittenhouse deserves a fair trial, but so do other people. And I think that I just feel like this case, just watching it unfold and the support Kyle Rittenhouse has gotten from the average American and just watching the judge, it's just insane. I mean, to me.
All right, let's break it down. You said support he's gotten from average Americans and the judge. Let's start with the support he's received from average Americans.
Mm-hmm. Well, just like you just hear about people, like, you know, just on social media, you hear people talking about, you know, he defended himself. You hear the Fox News types, you know, you have celebrities that bailed him out of prison. I don't think this would happen if this was a brown or a black kid.
Before we get to the judge, what about your thoughts? You spent many years covering criminal defense, criminal justice matters at the courthouse here in Chicago. So this admonition I get from many people that don't think about absolutely anything except for that one moment when Kyle Rittenhouse was confronted by the people he eventually killed. And when you look at that, it's absolutely self-defense. So don't take anything else into consideration. I am told that so many times by so many different people. What's your thoughts about that?
What do you mean? That it was self-defense? I mean, you know, I think the third man who was injured did have a gun on him, and he said he was pointing it at Rittenhouse, but he also said that he thought, you know, Rittenhouse was, you know, agitator. And you know, these people, if you see someone with a military weapon, I mean, how are you going to react? I just think the fact that it's like, how did it get to this point? I think if he was a black or brown individual, there's no way he would be able to run around with this military, you know, gun in a crowd of people, like, you know, his mom dropping him off. I think if it was a mother who was black or brown, she would have been arrested. But this mother's allowed to drop her kid off. And his whole excuse is, Kyle Rittenhouse has said that he was out there to protect property. And I just thought, I mean, is he really there to protect property? It's like, what kid goes halfway, you know, or goes across state lines to protect property? Like, who's, you know, was it his father's property? No. And it's just like, why was he going over there to do this? It's just like the whole case is just insane. I just think that if he was a black or brown kid, that never would have been a case where he like ends up in Wisconsin with a military rifle and all the cops are okay with him waving his gun around. It's just insane to me.
Well, I'll take it a step further, get your thoughts to this. And I just think there's a natural tendency, and I'm speaking on behalf of white people everywhere when I say this, okay? There's just a natural tendency for white people, when you just see, like, a white kid with a baby face, there's just to feel sorry for him. You may want to, like, repress it, I believe this is a play when I read articles or essays written by white people that to say, he was acting in self-defense. I just think there's a natural inclination to feel sorry for him, to sort of put yourself in his shoes, to associate him with people that you knew, similar kids that you might have known, pudgy-faced kids that you knew back in the day. You follow what I'm saying? And I just think there's a natural inclination for it. And then you reverse it. Think about it. Let's talk Trayvon Martin, who was killed by George Zimmerman, I forget how many years ago. And George Zimmerman contended that it was an act of self-defense, which was utterly preposterous, but whatever. I think similarly, when white people see a black person with a hood, there's a natural tendency to be suspicious. Do you follow what I'm saying, Romana? It's kind of bred into you. That's my thoughts. Do you vehemently disagree with me, or what's your reaction?
No, I agree with you. I just feel like, I don't know if it's like a self-conscious thing or it's just subconsciously, like, it's someone that they can relate to. They see the face and then they automatically think, oh, he's innocent, you know? So, or not innocent, but they kind of have, they humanize, you know, and they naturally humanize the person. And there's nothing wrong with humanizing anyone. I agree with that, but why humanize? There's just certain people that get humanized. They get afforded, you know, they have the privilege of being humanized while others don't. So I do think that what you're saying is right. I do think that there is this kind of like, people are like, oh, you're too hard on him. Let's look at the whole story. And I agree, we should look at the whole story, but let's do that with everybody else, like the Trayvon Martins of the world. So I agree.
Well, it's not even look at the whole story. It's only, for instance, so my point is the man showed up at a riot with a rifle. Okay. I'm like, what? Huh? How is that legal?
Exactly. Exactly.
And then what I'm told is that don't look at him showing up at the riot with the rifle. Just look at what happens. By the way, as that in itself is not an act of aggression. Do you follow? Showing up at a riot with a rifle. Is this that in itself? It's just okay. Let's just move on from that. So what they're saying is just ignore some of the events and just concentrate on that moment in which he was exchanged when he shot the people, when he shot three people. So now you made mention of something to me about another thing is. The stories that have come out over the last 10 years, I've actually had conversations with your loving husband, Mick, about this a lot, about young Muslim kids who get caught up in internet fantasy worlds about waging war in the Middle East and end up getting prosecuted, get caught up in just the world of terror, et cetera, and so forth. They never actually act on the their fantasies, but they sure fantasize about them. They're treated a little differently in the Kyle Rittenhouse. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree. The thing is, you know, you hear stories. I mean, a lot of people don't pay attention to these, but there are stories where, you know, young men who are Muslim, they're teenagers, they're misguided, and they're definitely not doing what I would support, but they're basically, you know, they get persuaded to, you know, they get caught in these internet chats, and then you have the FBI, you know, kind of watching them, and they start goading them, and then, you know, these kids end up getting arrested for saying that they're going to, you know, that they're going to go and join Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And then, you know, they get caught, and then they end up getting sentenced to like several years in prison, not even like five. It's like 15 to 20 years in prison. And they're usually 17 to 18 year old kids, teenagers, I should say. Yeah, some of them are young men. And, you know, there is, you know, nobody really, there's not really that much of an outrage because obviously, you know, what these kids are planning sound disturbing. They definitely need mental help. But there's definitely no sympathy for these kids, and they get thrown away in jail. Meanwhile, you have Kyle Rittenhouse, who's killed two people and injured a third person, and he's gotten all this sympathy. And I start thinking about, like, well, what if this was a Muslim kid who killed two people, and all of a sudden the Muslim community in the United States starts supporting him, and they're like, oh, we feel bad for him, we start bailing him out. I mean, that there would just be an uproar. But meanwhile, like having support for this kid and cheering him on and saying that he's an American hero, it's, I know a lot of people are outraged by it, but really this is like a very American thing right now where it's like, oh, he's a hero. And trust me, if he gets off, we're going to find out what the verdict is later today. I guarantee you, if he gets off and he's acquitted, he's going to be on Fox News. He's going to become an analyst at some point. His life is going to be fine. But I don't think any other, you know, you know, children or young men, young adults who are brown or black would ever get treated the same way. And yeah, a lot of people are outraged, but there is a huge segment of the population that isn't outraged and treat this guy as a hero. And they're the same people that, you know, are okay with, you know, clamping down on other people's civil liberties, people who don't look like Kyle Rittenhouse. But when it comes to Kyle Rittenhouse carrying a gun, they all talk about the Second Amendment. So it's just insane. I just think it's double standard.
All right, let's get to the judge, Judge Schneider. You've seen a lot of judges in your life covering various trials down through the years. Your thoughts on his behavior?
I just think his behavior is just insane. I shouldn't say insane. I just said it's unprecedented. I've never seen judges behave like that, where, you know, they say things like, while I'm talking to you, Kyle Rittenhouse has been cleared of all charges. So just wanted to let you know that has happened right now.
Wow, breaking news.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So just wanted to let you know about that. That has literally just happened. So.
Wow, breaking news in the Ben Jarofsky show. That just broke over. Acquitted of all charges. Yes. Found not guilty of homicide. This is just breaking news, folks. You're hearing this breaking news.
Yeah.
Kyle Rittenhouse acquitted on all counts.
Yep.
Here are the five felony counts. And quiet gave way to joyful shouts from Kyle Rittenhouse supporters on the courthouse steps after the verdicts were announced of not guilty on all counts. Kyle Rittenhouse sobbed, and was held by his lawyers after the jury finished reading its verdict, finding him not guilty of all counts for his killing of two people and wounding a third. And yes, first degree on the first count for first degree reckless homicide for killing Joseph Rosenbaum. The jury finds Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on the second count, first degree reckless endangerment for shooting at a man. The judge finds Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty. I'm not sure why the judge weighed in on that and not the jury. On a third count, first-degree reckless endangerment for shooting at an unknown man, the jury finds Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty. On the fourth and most serious count, first-degree intentional homicide for killing Anthony Huber, the jury finds Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty. On the fifth count, first-degree attempted intentional homicide, the jury finds Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty. Well, I must say, and there's some speaking
there
for
you
myself,
have it.
Wow.
We kind of predicted it. So sorry if I sounded all like jumpy while I was talking to you and not coherent, because I was kind of like prepping this story, and because I had to keep an eye on this and the story, because I post our Wire copy on our website as well. So I've been kind of handling that while we were talking. There you have it. I'm sure you predicted this or saw this coming. And I know, as I was kind of, you know, going on about the judge, I mean, just the way the judge was behaving, it just seemed like he definitely had a viewpoint on this case. It's just the way every time he opened his mouth, a lot of people thought that Kyle Rittenhouse would be charged of the gun case, the gun charge. And just before the juror started deliberating, the judge cleared him of those charges. So yeah. This happened while we were talking, and I have to say I'm not surprised. I don't know how you feel, Ben.
I'll tell you how I feel. I'm upset right now, and so this.
But are you shocked?
And I'm not shocked. I'm disappointed. I thought that because it was a 4-day holdout, that they might settle on a lesser charge.
But usually, if jurors are weighing in for a long time, it usually means because it's favorable to the defendant, from what I've learned at my days at 26 and Cal.
I just took it the other way. I thought, because I worked from the assumption that he was going to be acquitted for all the reasons you stated. And just a general, I don't know, just the tone and tenor of this case was leading that way. And also there was absolutely no sympathy whatsoever for Rosenbaum and Huber, the two men that he killed. We'll get into that later. there's like a hatred for them, or just a cold indifference, which because they're lefties. And so they were at the riot themselves, so their lives are worthless. So
yeah, and one of the things that we should definitely point out, which I'm sure all your listeners know, is that the reason why the victims who died and were injured were killed is while they were there for a protest about a black man who was shot by a police officer. That's one thing I think, you know, everybody obviously knows, but that's why this case is so political. Like these men that were killed and injured, they were protesting the fact that this black man got shot and he was paralyzed by a police officer, and they were protesting that action. There's a lot of Black Lives Matters protesters out there. And then we have, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse coming and saying that he's protecting the property from these quote unquote, you know, rioters and, you know, looters. So there's just a lot of layers to the story. And so, you know, a lot of people of color, that's why they feel like, number one, like, why was he allowed to do this? And this was a protesting, you know, for better lack of a word, is the treatment of black people in this country by law enforcement officials. And, you know, and we know that all the victims were white in this case. And we know Kyle Rittenhouse was white, and this is white, as we all know. But yeah, I think that's one thing that it's important to point out, which I'm sure all your listeners know already.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you used the word victim. We're not even allowed to call, going back to the judge, we're not allowed to call them victims.
There is a legal argument made there. I have never seen that happen at 26 and Cal where somebody said you can't call them victims, but that was one fair thing, but it wasn't fair for the judge to say it's okay to call the men who were the victims, that who were killed and injured, rioters, looters, and arsonists. Cause he said they could be called that if they could prove that. That's what they're doing.
I completely disagree with you on that one. I don't think it's fair. They are victims. They were killed. I think that's cancel culture from the right. And I just talk about double standards. When a judge does it in a court, well, the courthouse, people bend over backwards to give excuses as to why he's censoring the lawyer. Well, oh, it's Kyle Rittenhouse. He shot those people. They're victims. They're dead. And I just think it's a cancel culture from the right, and censorship from the right. And I see it happen all the time. And it's part of a larger, in my opinion, get your thoughts on this, just a larger desensitizing attitude that people have in this country about Rosenbaum and Huber. Like they don't exist. Who cares about them? No, why were they there? I mean, they're just a bunch of Marxists. They're worthless human beings. I've heard all these things said about them. And just in most murder cases that I read about, now sure, I don't cover them like you did, but I just read about the coverage in the newspaper. There's an attempt by the prosecutors to humanize the lives of the people who were killed and to talk about them as real human beings who lost their lives and there were consequences for their murder. They were instructed, you can't humanize the people who were killed. It was almost like they're abstractions who don't exist. You can't even talk about them as victims. So I found that, when you ask me what I think, I find that upsetting from the get-go.
I think that's wrong. I mean, legally, like I did talk to a couple experts when I was writing an editorial about the use of the word victims, and some defense attorneys were even saying, even though they disagreed with it, they said legally there are some cases, they've heard of some cases where people don't want to talk about the people who were killed or injured as victims because that word is like automatically assumes that, you know, the defendant is guilty. Fine, I can understand that. But not humanizing the people, the victims, as we call them, is insane because I've never seen that happen in my almost 10 years at the courthouse at 26th and Cal, I've never seen someone not humanize the people who, you know, are killed or are killed in, you know, gun violence or injured in gun violence. So that is a very curious thing. But I told you, I think it's just unprecedented the way this judge was behaving in general from the get-go. I mean, everything that came out of his mouth, from the way he discussed Asian food, you know, to his cell phone ring going off, you know, ringer going off, God bless the USA. And you know, it's really bad, but I know as a person of color, when you see someone who's super patriotic, a white person who's super patriotic and, you know, has like red, white and blue and like, you know, it's like playing that kind of music, you just automatically think like, oh my God, walk away from this guy, because you kind of think that he or she is a racist. And it's wrong for me to think that, because that's not how I should think about the American flag or any patriotic songs. But that's what's kind of ingrained now in my head. And so he had the song play, and, you know, a lot of reporters picked up on that. And just the way he was just talking. And then the fact that I forgot to bring this up, you know, they had 18 potential jurors listening to the case. And then they were going to pick 12 people. And usually a clerk picks out of this like bucket or whatever it is, and picks out the 12 jurors, and it's all anonymous, so they don't know who they're picking. But he let Kyle Rittenhouse pick those 12 jurors. I don't know if you saw that picture.
Oh, yeah.
It's just bizarre. And they said that, you know, I was reading all the stories and they said it was unprecedented. They said that usually a clerk is doing that. So to have the suspect go over, and it seems like Kyle Rittenhouse was running the courthouse at some point. It's just like the way the optics, at least.
Was the jurors in the courthouse in the room when Kyle Rittenhouse drew the names?
That I don't know.
I don't know.
But I've seen pictures of him. Yeah.
I know. I saw the pictures of him drawing. I thought it was bizarre, and it showed sort of an affection the judge had for Rittenhouse. And I'll talk about, I'll repeat what I said earlier. I've noticed this. When white people talk about Kyle Rittenhouse, they have a sympathy for him based on experiences they've had in the past. I think that, like, he reminds them of people they've seen, or
their cousins,
or their nephews, or, you know, their grandkids or what have you. And they just natural tendency just to not take him seriously as a murderer. And when you couple that with the dehumanization of the people that he killed, it's just, I think you're right. I shouldn't be shocked or surprised. I think you're absolutely correct, Ramona. I shouldn't be surprised or shocked that he was acquitted, but I'm profoundly disappointed and painfully so.
I am too. I'm just not surprised. You know, whenever people talk about white privilege and how it doesn't exist, this is just a prime example. I mean, a very good example of why many people do think white privilege exists. You can get away with almost anything. You can get away with murder being a white person. I mean, and it's like, meanwhile, people of color have to be careful about the way we, you know, they conduct themselves. You have to be careful about what you say, what you, you know, the way you move. It's heartbreaking. And this is America 2021. I think when I was younger, I had a lot more hope in this country, but the older I get, the more cynical I become. And I've become like my father, who used to tell me that a lot of people in America are racist. I'm like, no, you're so like overly sensitive. And now I feel like I've become my dad. And, you know, I do think that this country is seriously damaged, and we're not as wonderful as we think we are.
No, we're not.
Or have think and, we are.
And there's so much, we'll transition out of Kyle Rittenhouse, because it's, the more I think about it, the more upset I get. So I'll just transition out of it.
We'll transition out of it.
But your father was a wise man, and they always say that it's amazing how, I'm butchering a Mark Twain quote, it's amazing how much smarter my father seems now than he was 10 years ago. The older you get, the smarter your father looks. But similarly, there's a headline in today's paper, Rahm Emanuel did not cover up shooting. And so that's a little Laquan McDonald. And they sat on that evidence of the shooting of Laquan McDonald for over a year and only released it when a judge ordered them. And yet that's not a cover up. And so these are the inconsistencies and double standards, Ramana, that we're hit with every single day. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, well, what we see, and it's so obvious to us, what we like, the double standard, the favorite treatment that Kyle Rittenhouse got, we're exposed to that. Well, for how many weeks has this been going on now? How many weeks has this trial been going on? We've been exposed to that on a regular basis. We're supposed to ignore it. Laquan McDonald gets shot on October 2014. In November 2015, Rahm finally releases the evidence of that shooting because a judge ordered him to, and then we're told, oh, it's not a cover-up. So there's things that we see right in front of us every single day, and we're told, no, it's not that way. You see, the sun is out now, but in reality, the sun is not out. So forget that what you see in front of you, Ramana. And it's so I can understand why your father would take a look. Do you follow? If he were here with us, and I wish he were. I never met him, but he seems like a good guy. If he were here today, looking at these, the headline of Rahm did not cover up shooting of a murder in which we did not see the evidence for over a year, Ramana, okay? But that's not a cover-up. And then somehow or other, they're not victims, even though they were killed. And he didn't really kill them, even though he killed them. So welcome to justice.
Yeah,
in the United States.
And we're going to talk about Malcolm X and the two men who were exonerated this week. One passed away. So we're talking about cover-ups and about the treatment of people of color in the justice system. So if your readers, and you and I have both followed the case of these two men, Khalil Islam and Muhammad Aziz. Khalil Islam has passed away, but they were exonerated yesterday from the murder charges or murder conviction of killing Malcolm X. And it turns out that the judge who exonerated them yesterday or cleared them of their charges basically said that the NYPD and the FBI basically withheld information that would have cleared these men back in the 60s. And so one of the men, Muhammad Aziz, is still alive. He's 83 years old today. And he just basically said, this should have never happened. And so we have this case of these, black men charged in or convicted and sentenced to years in prison for the killing of this very prominent black Muslim leader in the United States and getting wrongfully convicted. And then you have Kyle Rittenhouse getting away with murder. So it's interesting. So there's three men that were charged and convicted in Malcolm X's murder. And the third guy, as we were talking earlier before we started the show, he basically said that these two guys who were exonerated yesterday had nothing to do with it, but these men still stayed in prison, I think, until the 80s when they were paroled. And, you know, one guy died and, you know, he always maintained his innocence, as did the other man. So, yeah, it's really sad. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X? It was on Netflix last year, and it was just really compelling. And I have to think that this is what compelled authorities to look into this case again and to clear these men. So, I mean, it's good news, but it's also sad and speaks to how broken our criminal justice system is in the United States.
Yeah. Well, that was a good summary. And we talked about this with Monroe on Wednesday, and I'm going to dedicate a whole show to this. I'm fascinated by this case. I think I said this to you, Ramana. I've said it to pretty much everybody. I'm walking around talking about the Malcolm X case. Malcolm X, of course, the great black Muslim leader who was killed in 1965. That's a long time ago. That was before my guest was born. That's how long ago it was. And he was killed in 1965. He was giving a speech at the Audubon Ballroom in Washington Heights in New York, February of 1965. And there was some sort of a diversionary explosion from somewhere in the back. I don't know where it was, but in the hall where he was giving the speech, people's attentions were turned, and men stood up in the front row and gunned them down. And so this is a high-profile assassination that happened in the middle of the day while he was giving a speech. They interrupt the news, a regular scheduled program. That's how I knew about it. I was a kid. I remember this, to say Malcolm X had been killed. There's this high-profile murder. And somehow or other, Ramana, of the two out of the three men who were tried and convicted and sent to prison were innocent. The third guy said, I was there. I was a participant. And he testified. He testified that the other two guys had nothing to do with it. And they still sent him to prison. And I think, Ramana, I think about the high-profile killings that I've lived through, that my generation, the boomers, have lived through. Both Kennedys, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. You could talk about the assassination attempts that were unsuccessful. Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, George Wallace. No other case was, did they get it wrong? So obviously, you know, there's some people who say, well, Lee Harvey Oswald, Ben, didn't kill JFK. I don't buy that. But they got it wrong. And it blows my mind. It just seems so obvious to me, Ramana, that there's a part of this story and that is not being told. And that part of the story is what role the FBI had with the investigation, with the killing, either participating in the killing itself or looking the other way when it happened. I cannot help but think that there's a huge chunk of this story that's not been revealed to us. Your thoughts?
No, I agree. I mean, there were undercover cops at the Audubon Ballroom that day. There's no way. I mean, the FBI was, I mean, there's no way. We know that the FBI was looking into the Nation of Islam just because of the teachings. And, you know, they were, you know, at that point, most of America was just scared and perplexed by the Nation of Islam and its teachings. So there's no way the FBI did not know what was happening. I think at the very least, they turned a blind eye. They saw that this was happening because they knew that there was a rift between Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X. You know, Malcolm X at this point had split from the Nation of Islam and was following more what we call traditional Islam and had started his own group. And, you know, Malcolm X, as we know, as most of us know, he's, you know, revered as a hero. But now when you look at, you know, he was so charismatic when you know, for a long time, Malcolm X was vilified, but you just watch all the clips of him. He was very charismatic. Elijah Muhammad thought he was a threat and, you know, probably wanted to get rid of him or just like, you know, get rid of the, you know, quote unquote problem. And so I think, you know, the Nation definitely had some sort of hand in it, but I also think authorities just sat there or even participated or facilitated Malcolm X being assassinated. That's what I think. I could be wrong, but there's no way that they didn't turn a blind. They, at the very least, they turned a blind eye. That's what I think.
Yeah. There's no way that they, at the very least, they turned a blind. You're absolutely correct. And I'll tell you why. Now we're heading in really into my obsession country, J. Edgar Hoover and the way the FBI behaved in the 1960s. The FBI, if you read any history book of the 60s, any thorough history of the 60s of the Civil Rights movie, the Taylor Branch books, for instance, and you go back and look at the notes, you know, these exhaustive studies of the 1960s and the Civil Rights Movement, and you go back and look at the notes, the footnotes that these historians supply as evidence to support what they're saying, much of it is based on what limited files the FBI has released regarding their surveillance. And it quickly becomes apparent that the FBI was taping the conversations of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, plus, I mean, various politicians. But let's just concentrate on those three. So if you're taping the conversations of Elijah Muhammad, who's the head of the Nation of Islam, you know what he's saying to his lieutenants regarding Malcolm X. And if you're taping the conversations of Malcolm X, you, the FBI, know what Malcolm X is saying about his suspicions and fears, et cetera, and so forth. And of course, you know, they hounded Martin Luther King They try to drive him to suicide. They listen to his phone conversations. They taped his hotel rooms. They had evidence of his extramarital affairs, that they sent the tapes to King and to his wife, to try to drive him to commit suicide. So we know the FBI was doing this, but they won't release all the evidence, Romana. Do you follow me? They're concealing. They only release some of it. So you're absolutely correct. There's no way they don't know. You know what? They have to know. They just haven't released the evidence yet.
And, I agree. Maybe when we're gone, there'll be more evidence released. maybe 50 years from now.
Well, I know that I will not live long enough. Now I've got some years on you, so you and Mick will, I think, may be around when they release it, but you'll be ancient. And
we'll be in a senior citizen home at that point.
Yes. Now explain to me.
Waving our canes.
What are they protecting us from? What are they protecting us from by not releasing information about stuff that went down in the 1960s?
Because I think the American government wants everybody to think that they're all innocent and never do anything wrong, but we know that's not true, right? And so I think there's just this romanticism of, you know, American government, and we don't do the same things that other countries do, or, you know, we don't target certain people. And this is like, you know, we let people live the way they want to live. There's freedom and all this stuff. So I don't know. I feel like it'd be an embarrassment to them. And especially now that Malcolm X is considered a hero to many people, not just African-Americans, I think I think a lot of white people have also kind of started, you know, reading Malcolm X and paying attention to, you know, the words that he said. Because for the longest time, I mean, I never heard of who Malcolm X was until I was 17 years old. And the fact that I was Muslim and a friend of mine had the book, gave it to me, I think that helped. But a lot of my white friends thought Malcolm X, like, they kind of vilified him and said that, you know, he was kind of like, you know, kind of like a fringe figure. And I think Spike Lee and you know, other people, this resurgence like in the 90s of like people reading Malcolm X again and the movie coming out, I think it made people kind of embrace him more. I think he became more embraced in the mainstream America. So I think it would be especially embarrassing to the FBI now to release that. I mean, I think they're embarrassed about what they did to Martin Luther King and recorded him.
They have not released those. By the way, they've not
released. They haven't released those, but don't you think that there's some embarrassment that they did this to Martin Luther King? I don't know. Maybe there isn't.
I hear what you're saying. I don't buy as an excuse.
No, it isn't.
Embarrassed. I think all this information should be released. You know, it's so funny. So many of our politicians, Mick and I talk about this all the time. So many of our politicians just talk about the need for transparency. They use that word all the time. And all I see is the opposite of transparency everywhere I look. You know what I'm saying? I was going to say,
I agree. It's like everybody talks, that's a buzzword. It's like, it's very woke to say the word transparency, but then nobody's transparent. You know, it's like, let's hide as much as we can.
Yes. And I see it all the time. The first instinct is to cover. You're right. To cover up. When I think about it, you're right. The first instinct is to cover up. And to protect the political reputation of whatever leader's in charge. So they do that all the time in the city of Chicago. They're still doing that. They're still protecting Rahm. The guy's not even mayor anymore. They're still protecting Rahm. Well, there's no evidence to say he engaged in a cover up. Hello? He didn't release the tape for over a year. Hello? That's not evidence? Oh, God. All right. You know what? I'm too fired up. We have to change. Let's change gears and talk about something less upsetting to me. So let's close by having a little fun. Let's see if this works, Romana. Number one, this is something that Romana sent to me. We'll end on a higher note or a cheerfully note. We're watching right-wingers make asses of themselves. Laura Ingraham, and I don't know who she was talking to in this bit that you sent me, and thank you very much for sending it to me. It made my day. I've listened to it like a million times. So do you know who she's talking to in this tape?
some guy with the last name Arroyo, but they were talking about how they don't want their pop culture or their movies and TV shows to be woke. And so they were pointing out the guy, the guest on the show, I know his last name is Arroyo. I should know who his first name is, but he basically was pointing out to this this show called You. Should I tell you a little bit about what he was talking about? Because I know you don't watch You.
I don't watch You. I had never heard, shameful confession. Until you sent this to me, I had never heard of the show called You. I didn't know it existed.
So let me tell you a little bit about it.
Go ahead.
So it's about this guy who works in a bookstore, and he's very like, you know, he kind of has commentary on everybody. But anyway, he falls in love with these girls and he ends up like killing them. So, and then the latest is that he marries this woman who's also a killer, you know. So, you know, and then so this episode is where they're kind of trying to figure out their marriage. They end up having a kid, and it's actually a very good show because it has a lot of commentary on, you know, a lot of commentary on pop culture, a lot of commentary on society. And so this latest season was made probably during the pandemic. And so these two killers end up having a baby, and the baby ends up getting measles. It turns out that, you know, they moved to the suburbs. So it turns out one of their, you know, friends in the community, he's an anti-vaxxer and didn't want his kids getting the vaccine for the measles. So the woman, who's like a killer too, she's furious. And as soon as he finds out it's him, you know, she owns a bakery. They have this whole facade of they live this perfect suburban life, but they're actual killers. If anybody wants to watch a show, you might want to stop listening to right now. But she ends up killing the anti-vaxxer. She ends up killing the anti-vaxxer because she, you know, at the end of the day, she like put her son in jeopardy. So it's like, you know, it was commentary on anti-vaxxers. And so I think that's why this guy who was on Laura Ingraham's show brought up the show. He's like, why are you guys like bringing up this woke thing? And so I don't know, Ben, if you wanted to play
okay,
it.
Here we go. I'm going to play
the
it
back
now.
And forth.
So, okay. So everybody knows the joke here. You got to know this is that there's a TV show on Netflix called You. Y-O-U. There's a show on Netflix called You. Got to set it up so you don't end up looking like Laura Ingraham. All right, here we go.
You know, I was watching an episode of You where measles came up.
Wait. When did I mention measles?
I don't know. It was on You.
What was on me? What are you talking about? Is Raymond even hearing what I'm saying? I never had the measles.
Was on You.
We never did a... We never did a measles and vaccine episode. Is this a joke?
I know.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It was on You. It was on You.
I've never had measles. What are you talking about? This is stupid.
It was an episode of a show, Laura.
What's it called?
You.
What is
you.
He talking about?
It's called You.
I've never done a show on measles. I just completely give up. We got to get
it's
out of
here. It's a show
I give up.
Called You on Netflix.
There's a show called Laura Ingraham on Netflix.
Oh,
we're both laughing because it's absurd. So anyway, it turns out it was some sort of bit they were doing. They were doing some sort of Abbott and Costello.
Wait, Tamma, could you hear it when I played it?
Yeah, yeah, okay, I could hear it. I don't know
if listeners or maybe Nate can put the clip.
Yeah, but if the listeners had a hard time listening to it, just Google You and Laura Ingraham. Anyway, the main actor who's on the show, he like even tweeted about it, like, oh, this is a total bit. You know, that's what he said. And I just thought they were so dense that they didn't know about it. But then everybody's like, it was totally a joke. And a lot of people are just saying, totally not funny, just like Republicans. I've seen people tweet that kind of stuff. So it was just absurd.
It's utterly absurd. It's so not a bit. Laura Ingraham is completely clueless. Even at the end, the guy goes, Laura, he's so frustrated. It's like, who's on first by Abbott and Costello? You should go check that bit out. So
yeah.
It's like,
You is mostly like a lot of women watch it, but you know, my nephew like breezed through it, but I don't know. It was a very popular show. I'm surprised you haven't heard about it, but it is, it's kind of like an entertaining show. If you wanted to watch something that's like mindless and entertaining and about like this killer and, you know, has social commentary, it's kind of like a dark comedy. It's pretty good.
All right. Well, just listen to that. The utter cluelessness of Laura Ingraham and how she gets frustrated. And even after the guy explains to her, no, there's a show on Netflix called You. And he goes, there's a show on Netflix called The Laura Ingraham Show? And I'm like, oh. And he's like, you know what? So, ladies and gentlemen, MAGA, that's your leader right there. Clueless. All right. And we'll end on that note. We didn't get a chance to talk about impeachment. You finally got to see impeachment. I'm be writing a column about it for next week, or Ryan Murphy's epic 9-part or 10-part document drama on Lewinsky Clinton. I absolutely was obsessed with it and loved it. Just give you very brief thumbs up or thumbs down on the in your humble opinion, Ramana, impeachment.
Thumbs up. I mean, I knew what happened in the story, and I've like definitely followed the cases. I've read articles with Monica Lewinsky, and I just thought the actresses did a great job. I didn't even know that was Mira Sorvino playing the mom. You know, you have familiar faces in there. Why am I forgetting her name? But the woman who played, Edie Falco plays Hillary Clinton. Even Clive Owen did a good job playing Bill Clinton. I thought the acting was great. And Linda Tripp, Sarah Paulson, did an awesome job. And she's a Ryan Murphy staple. I don't know if you knew that or not, but I used to watch American Horror Story. And so she used to be in a lot of those shows. I think that's what kind of got her like elevated and got her noticed. So I know she's like one of his favorite stars. I thought she did a great job playing Linda Tripp. I think it was very well acted. I have to read articles about if there was any, you know, usually in these biopics, they kind of like bend the truth, but I know Monica Lewinsky was a producer on the show or worked very closely with Beanie Feldstein, who played Monica Lewinsky on the show. So she was there while it was being filmed, and I read an interview about her on the show. So she was very closely related to it. So I don't know. I'm going to read more on it, but I thought it was definitely very, very well acted.
Well,
I look forward to your column.
Yeah, no, I've got so much to say about it. And I agree with that riff you did. The acting, folks, even if you don't care about the politics, Sarah Paulson, who is, Ramana said, a Ryan Murphy mainstay, she's been in, she was Marcia Clark in his O.J. Simpson series, is absolutely fantastic as Linda Tripp, the woman who spies on Monica Lewinsky and then reveals her innermost secrets to the FBI and the Kenstar investigators. She is so diabolically bizarre. And Beanie Feldstein is sensational as Monica Lewinsky. And you know what? Edie Falco kills it as Hillary Clinton. And I had this thought. Edie Falco and Sarah Paulson are such great actresses, Ramana. I think they could have reversed it and they would have done brilliant. In other words, Sarah Paulson could have played Hillary and killed it as Hillary, and Edie Falco could have been the diabolically whacked out Linda Tripp. Nobody looks good in this documentary, let's just put it that way, except for Monica. I think Monica Lewinsky in the end is sort of a sympathetic figure.
She was a victim at the end of the day. She was only 21 at the time. You know, it is very sad the way she was treated. So, I'm not saying that, you know, it's just very, it's a sad situation, but yeah, I thought it was, thanks for recommending it to me. I did watch it, and I look forward to reading your column.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'm going to write that this weekend and it'll drop next weekend. All right, Ramana, I want you to have the happiest of Thanksgivings. I know it's going to be a happier Thanksgiving this year. Last year, everybody was in isolation. We were following Mayor Lori Lightfoot's order not to get together with our families. But this year, you will be able to get together with your family, and I know you guys are going to have a good time, right?
Yeah, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, too.
All right, that's Ramana Hussein. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.